This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 54, where we're going to talk about the JavaScript theater of war and Office 365 announcements at TechEd Barcelona, recored live October 24th, 2014.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Well, good morning, AC. How are things?
I'm depressed.
Oh, no. What's happened?
It is a no school day in the county where I live. And the wife took the kids with my cousin and their kids. And guess where they went? That's just a few hours south of me.
Yeah. Well, there's only one thing a few hours south of you other than a whole bunch of rubbery, wrinkly people because of the sun. And I'm guessing it's something to do with spaceships.
We just lost our old person contingent.
Here's our viewership going down the tubes.
Yeah, they took them down to the Kennedy Space Center, and they're going to go look at the shuttle Atlantis exhibit and go see a Saturn V rocket. And I've been there before, and I've seen all this stuff before, except the shuttle Atlantis and the solid rocket boosters and external fuel tank that are, all three of those are perfectly mounted and sitting outside vertical. So you can see how big they are. It's really cool to look at it on like Google Maps or Bing Maps from the satellite view. But
that's cool.
Yeah, the Atlantis exhibit's there. They took them down for that. So I stayed home so that I could do recording in a quiet house. Who do you think got the short end of the stick on that one?
Yeah. I feel for you, man.
I'm a little bummed out, but any rate, how are you, bud?
I'm busy, 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 getting ready to go to Barcelona. This will come out right after I've been at Barcelona, so I'm sure I'll feel better by the time this recording comes out. But right now, cramming to get stuff done. I leave on Sunday. We're recording this on a Friday, and lots to do. So we're going to talk a bit about this today, actually.
The meat of the show.
Exactly. I'll come back to this. How about that?
That sounds good.
So tell me something. Like, what the hell is the JavaScript theater of war? I read the show, like what we were going to call the show, and then I was recording my intro. I was like, the JavaScript theater of war? What is this? He's finally lost it.
Yeah, well, first it's part of a link bait thing to try and get some attention, but yeah, so I have a bit of an advantage over you in the sense that I'm on the East Coast, and so I get to see the news and digest it a bit more than you do in the morning.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so let me take a step back here, and let me just preface this with, I could be overstating it. I don't think I am. It'll be curious to see how things evolve, but let's just say I think shit's about to get real.
Interesting. How so?
Okay, so I've been spending a lot more time in the last year or so doing front-end framework kind of stuff, doing front-end apps, and so web-based apps that do Ajax-style calls back to the server. My framework of choice is Angular, kind of like with, it seems like, the rest of the world, except for the small... I just pissed off our Ember contingent.
You're always gonna bug somebody, right? Because you haven't picked their favorite framework of the day.
Exactly. Yeah. So, AngularJS front end framework, basically a SPA presentation framework. So, I've been paying a lot of attention to this whole JavaScript space and listening to a lot of really good. There's a bunch of podcasts I started listening to about it as well that are really interesting, and I really enjoyed it. I really like working in JavaScript a lot more now than working in managed code and stuff and being more on the front end stuff. So. One of the things that people that going from server-side code over to and managed code over to something like JavaScript or a dynamic language is they get frustrated because they feel like JavaScript is so kind of willy-nilly, so forgiving. There's no type safety. You don't find your errors until you run your unit tests or until you actually test your app in the browser, and then sometimes errors slip through.
Yeah.
So Microsoft created something a couple of years ago. They started it about a year or two ago, and then they published in April of this year, 1.0, something called TypeScript, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what TypeScript is, just in a nutshell to people, I look at it as two different things. Basically, all JavaScript is TypeScript. It's valid. So you could take a JavaScript file, a .js, you could rename it to a .ts, and everything's going to work just fine, because what TypeScript does is it takes JavaScript with some special annotations and compiles it down to JavaScript. In doing that, you can do two things. You can add extra type annotation information to basically say that this variable is a number, or it is a string, or it is a Boolean. And you can do that not only when you define the variable, you can do it in the function declaration for the parameters, and you can do it also in the function return, so that other TypeScript and JavaScript code that you write, the TypeScript compiler in Visual Studio and other tools like WebStorm, the popular JetBrains JavaScript editor, and things like Sublime, they all have stuff in them that they check to see if you have compile errors. So then JavaScript development feels very much like C-sharp development, where before you hit F5, you see the red squigglies of errors and stuff that are happening, and you get very rich IntelliSense for your types. You can take it even farther, and TypeScript also will allow you to... Today, we're all working with something called ECMAScript 5, which is JavaScript version 5. We've been using that for a few years. Mm-hmm. We are in the final stages of ratifying ECMAScript 6, which is adding a lot of stuff to make it easier to work with JavaScript in an enterprise-style large project. But number one, the specification for ES6 is not done yet. And even when it is done in the next few months or year, the browsers are going to take some time to implement it. And so what they did is, you know, one of the things with TypeScript is that when you compile it, it will compile down. You can write ES6 style code with like classes and that kind of stuff and modules, but it's compiled down to either the require or common JS syntax, which makes it friendly to current ES5 based browsers.
Gotcha.
Okay. So that's TypeScript. Mm-hmm. It's all done. It's all good. We're version one. I've used it. It's good. It does. I think that, you know, you can use it a little bit and get benefit from it, or you can go full in and have stuff that is going to be great with ES6, works great today, but you really have to think about writing JavaScript in a different way with classes and stuff. So not going to pass judgment on if it's good or bad there. I definitely like it for certain things. There's other things we can have a whole discussion about that I won't get into. Here's why I say shit's about to get real. A draft document has been published today, hosted as a Google Doc called AtScript, ATScript. Mm. What is ATScript? Let me just read you what it says. JavaScript has a large thriving community. However, it is missing some features which make it much more manageable for large scale application development. The goal of AtScript is to enhance the language with these missing features without infringing upon its current capabilities. Mm. Does that sound familiar?
Oh yeah, a little.
Okay. So yet we have yet another thing that will compile something down to JavaScript.
Gotcha.
Now, would you normally dismiss this? Because it's like yet another framework. It's like, yeah, somebody just did this, right?
I suspect you've got a little bit of a curveball coming.
Mm-hmm. Guess who the draft document was authored by?
Mark Rackley. For those who don't know Mark, he's a prolific JavaScript guy in the SharePoint world.
Now what I'm about to say is going to be construed as a shot at Mark. That's not fair, man. No. You totally just threw me under the...
I'm just poking the fun.
I was about to say, if it was written by anybody else that I'm about to say, you would dismiss it as just like, oh, this is just somebody else's plaything. So that was not a shot at you, Mark. I was going to say it anyway. But this is authored by Misko Hivery and Rob Eisenberg.
Ooh.
Rob Eisenberg is the guy behind Caliburn Micro, which is all the MVVM stuff for XAML-based development. And he also did Durandal.js,
yes,
which is a competing framework to Angular. But Misko is the father of Angular and works for Google.
Oh my goodness. So these two have got together and gone, let's figure out a better way to do this for large enterprise applications in a real nice modular way. You get a bunch of the learnings from what these two dudes have been up to in the frameworks world, mm-hmm. and then going to make it a whole bunch better. I'll caveat this by saying I suck at JavaScript. And the reason I suck at JavaScript, A, is because I haven't spent enough time with it. Like, I can read it, no problem, and I can write basic stuff, no problem. Make me build a big spa-based app, get out of here. I wouldn't have a clue, right? Mm. And it all boils back to having not done enough of it, of course, right? Like anything. But also, I'm a compiled code guy from way back. I love me some C#, right? I love writing C# for my trips for Windows Phone. I used to write, you know, all the WinForm stuff for desktop apps back in the day. You know, obviously ASP.NET and all that stuff, right? All C#, hit compile, tells me what I've done wrong, can fix up a bunch of things before I start trying to debug it, right? Mm. And it's always, always pissed me off, pardon my French, that I can't do the same with JavaScript very easily. Mm. And it feels like we'll get there one day, but for now, it just feels like, to me, JavaScript feels like printf debugging where my naive and lame lack of knowledge on this is that when I want to debug JavaScript, I've got to run it and I've got to wait for something to fail and then I've got to figure out where. And it's, although it's not printf debugging because you do have breakpoints and you can run through it and all that, there's some pretty good tools in the browser. It still feels like you shouldn't have to deal with 50% of that if you had decent compile time checking.
Yeah, and I hear you. And I think a lot of that is the tooling. And then there are things like ES6 is supposed to help a lot of this. But, you know, it's funny because you're looking at it from one side, which is it would be nice when JavaScript kind of gets to that point where I can be as prolific as writing JavaScript as I am with C# because of that compile time checking and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that there's a flip side of it too, which is someone could say, God, it's going to be nice when I can write C# in the same way that I write JavaScript, which means it works cross-platform the exact same way. It works on the server and in the client same way. And that's why one of the reasons I fell in love with Silverlight is because I could write C# in the browser.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I'm loving JavaScript is because I can do, if I use Node, then I can go cross-platform and the JavaScript will still run the same way on Windows or on OS X or on Linux and on server. Okay, so that's called isomorphic JavaScript, and it's more challenging than it really sounds. It is a hell of a lot more realistic than the whole Java write once run anywhere.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that just kind of, let's go twisted. I'm gonna borrow a phrase from a movie that's not, this is the thing that rubs a man's rhubarb the wrong way. Okay? So with
that sounds bad, by the way.
It does. So here's the thing with AtScript. When you go through and you look at the design doc or the draft doc and you start reading through it, there's a lot of comparisons that they make to TypeScript. And they say TypeScript's doing it this way. And oh, this was introduced by TypeScript. And TypeScript is already introduced saying how to go through and do the annotations. When you look at how you annotate a variable or a parameter inside of a function call or the return type,
It
looks just like TypeScript. Mm. It looks just like it. At the bottom, they explain, here's why we're doing this instead of using TypeScript. And then they also say at the bottom, here's why we're doing this instead of using Dart, which is a JavaScript-based language inside Google that Google's got. The thing that I think is just a little frustrating to me is that, number one, I look at these two guys and I'm like, and I know that they're participating in the feedback for TypeScript, but when you look at the draft doc, it looks so similar to TypeScript that you have to kind of take a step back and wonder and say, why didn't you just fork it? It's a GitHub project.
Yeah, gotcha.
Or why don't you try and be more contribute to this instead of saying, here's a new one? Because at the bottom of the doc, they've said, we're going to use AtScript to build the next version of Angular and make it so that people doing Angular apps will be very friendly with AtScript. And it's just like, you're doing your own damn thing. Mm. And that's why I look at it and say, and I know it's not, they're not saying it's a Google thing. These two guys have published it on their own. It's hosted in a Google Doc. That doesn't make it a Google thing. But just by proxy, it just looks like it's a Google thing.
Yeah.
And TypeScript is a Microsoft thing. And you look at it going, damn it. Why do we have to have a browser war again? So I'll be curious to see. I might be making a mountain out of a molehill. But to me, I think it'll be curious to watch this unfold over the next few weeks and see, as I said before, is shit get real?
Yeah.
I haven't combed through it, but yesterday and today was something called NG Europe, which is a conference in Europe for Angular. And they published for ngConf, they published all the sessions on YouTube. And Mishko and Vojta, which are two of the guys from Google that run the, and Brian Green are the guys that run the Angular project for Google. They're there and they're giving presentations. So I'm curious to kind of dive in and see, was this discussed? Was it presented? How did they respond to the whole TypeScript thing? And for those that are curious in this, I'll also put a link to one or two interviews that Mishko had with on a JavaScript-based podcast I listened to where TypeScript came up, and he was kind of, now I can see why he was hedging his bets and when he was doing it. So it's a little irritating, but it's also going to be curious to see how this plays out.
Hey, sometimes things have to get a little broken and busted and competitive to get better. And so if there's one thing that comes out of this that I'm excited about is that for me as a really bad JavaScript developer, or an unknowledgeable JavaScript developer, if the world of JavaScript development gets easier because of this war between AtScript and TypeScript, if it gets better because of that, then I'm happy about it. And sometimes it'll take for one of them to win over the other and then make things better and push the industry forward. So
my fear is that I 100% agree with you, and it's competition is always good, perspective is good. My fear is that this is going to create a fracture.
Yeah, gotcha.
And you'll have two different camps, and that doesn't help.
Hey, but it all results in JavaScript being compiled out at the end of the day, right? And
yeah.
You could argue the same as the difference between Java and C Sharp, right? At the end of the day, the stuff gets, you know, run and produces a program. Mm-hmm. And we've had that for years. So there's always choices, right?
Yeah. I mean, and you've also got, there's another one that's in the space that's been here for a while, is CoffeeScript. I know there's some guys that are very, very, that really prefer CoffeeScript over that stuff. I personally don't like CoffeeScript, but I don't know. I think that when you have someone like Google and the people behind Angular pitch something like this, it's one of those, all right, you got to take this seriously. And this will be cool. So I'll put a bunch of links in the show notes to not only the draft document for the AtScript primer, and the link to the interview that on the, I think it was on the JavaScript Jabber podcast or the Adventures in Angular podcast. And I've got a blog post that I'm putting more of my thoughts around this. That's going to go, I'm publishing, well, it'll be definitely live before this post goes live, but I'm going to publish it today.
Cool.
It'll be curious to see where this goes.
That will be interesting. Good developments. I'm going to have to read that doc. We'll link to it in the show notes.
I want to get Anders to comment on this. I want to see what Anders has to say.
Oh, yeah.
For those who don't know, Anders is the guy behind Angular. Behind TypeScript.
Yeah, there you go. Nice.
In all seriousness, though, let's take a step back really quick. And let me just kind of give you a little bit more about what I found out about AtScript. So essentially what they have proposed, or what they're saying, is that AtScript is going to be a superset of TypeScript. TypeScript is missing a few things as far as Rob and Mishko are concerned. And it deals with type annotations and one or two other things as well. Recently, they did publish kind of like a roadmap going forward for TypeScript, and how it aligns with AtScript. I don't really see too much of an alignment there. But I know that they do have a goal, at least from the Mishko and Rob side, they do have a goal that there will be a unification of what AtScript and TypeScript are doing. They'll try and stay right in line with each other. But in addition, what they're going to try and do is to get this stuff added as part of the JavaScript or ECMAScript spec for the next spec that comes out. So that's not ECMAScript 6, that's another one going down the road. So it's basically they're taking what TypeScript has done and they're trying to add a couple extra pieces to it. So I don't know, from my perspective, it's a little frustrating that, you know, we have yet another company coming up with yet something else. And I'm not doing this as a Google bashing or whatever. It'd just be nice to see that maybe the stuff that they think that needs to be in AtScript, let's have a serious conversation with Anders over at Microsoft and about the future of TypeScript. And maybe we can look to getting that the stuff that they're talking about into TypeScript so that we can just have like one of these standard languages instead of like two. Because TypeScript is a superset of ECMAScript 5 today. There will be plans to get it as a superset of ECMAScript 6. So that everything you write in TypeScript should compile down to ECMAScript 5 or ECMAScript 6. And that's using classes and interfaces and all that stuff. But then AtScript is a superset of TypeScript. So just like all JavaScript is valid TypeScript, all TypeScript should be valid AtScript as well. Okay, so that's kind of clarifying it a little bit. And again, I'll have in the link of the show notes, I have a blog post that I'll add in the show notes that talks a little bit about it in my take. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, enough JavaScript stuff. How about we switch over to that wasn't really so much of a topic of the podcast, but we do the Microsoft Cloud Show. You're involved with Office 365, and I've been working with some guys on your team lately, and I know that they're running around like chickens with their heads cut off because they're just crazy busy. What's up with you guys next week at Tech Ed Barcelona? You got a few things that you're going to share with everyone?
Yeah. We got to figure out what we're going to say around the tenses here, because it's like technically it's next week when we're recording this, but it will be last week when people hear this.
I say just speak like it's coming next week, and there's everybody listens to it, because it's not like, right. Well, unless all of a sudden some feature gets cut right before the keynote,
the announcement.
They were going to rush to try and cut it out of the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So yeah, Sunday flying to Barcelona. It's TechEd Europe, which. It's a big technical learning conference Microsoft puts on. There's a bunch of them that go on around the world, but next week is the one in Barcelona, which covers the sort of the European audience, I should say. It's probably the best way to put it. And so what we're doing there from an Office 365 sort of perspective is we're going to announce some new stuff for developers. And there's really sort of three main things we're going to announce. And then we're going to also show a little leg on some other things that we're working on for future stuff too.
Mm.
You may hear about that stuff too. But So there's really three main things that we're going to announce. The first of which is back at SharePoint conference, we came out or announced that we've got these Office 365 APIs, and they came out in preview. And they're really around files, contacts, calendar, and mail, right? So previously, the APIs in Office 365 were very sort of siloed. You either had to call Exchange Web Services to get stuff out of Exchange, you had to call the SharePoint APIs if you wanted to get stuff in and out of SharePoint, and so forth. And so everything was quite separated. But in those new Office 365 preview APIs, we started bringing them together so that you call one endpoint and you say, give me all the services that this user has access to. And it will return you back a set of endpoints that you can call REST-based APIs for mail, calendar, contacts, and files.
And that's, so that one that you call, that's the discovery service that we've heard about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you call the discovery service and it tells you information about that user and then also where all of their resources reside in Office 365 for each of those things.
Hmm.
So we came out with those at the SharePoint conference earlier this year. And then, so this week we'll be pulling the preview tag off those and moving them into general availability. So we've done a whole lot of work on them between when they came out in preview and now, and we feel good about moving them into GA, what we call GA.
Hmm.
And partially this is because we feel really good about where they're at. And also it's, people have been asking us when this is going to happen because they don't really want to take a bet on the APIs until they've been moved out of preview. So
I watched a very entertaining, was it, I wonder if that was on Yammer or Facebook, but I watched a very entertaining exchange between you and another SharePoint MVP or Office 365 MVP, I'm not sure which one he is, about the whole preview and we're changing the APIs if it's okay. That was that was really entertaining.
Yeah, and it's like we put it out in preview so that people can give us feedback on them, can play with them, use them, give us feedback. We've taken a ton of that feedback and we've changed the APIs because of it. And unfortunately, well, I don't even know if it's unfortunately. I think it's fortunate that we get the chance to change them because they're better because of it. But it does mean that if you wrote code against the APIs when they first came out and when you try to write code against them now, they're different. So you have to change code a little bit.
I wonder if there's a, I don't think that you guys are doing this, but I wonder if there's anything from the dev side. The Semver, have you heard of Semver?
No.
It's a, I can't remember who started this, but Semver is a versioning scheme where it says that you do, it's a number dot number dot number, so three different points, and then a dash release name. And so if it's like a first number is major changes that could break things, that could break backwards compat. Second number is additive features. Third number is patch.
Fixes, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, so fix. And then the last one is like if you have like an RC, like if you're in a release candidate, so it's, it'd be dash RC0. So 1.3.0 dot dash RC0, RC1, RC2.
Yeah, gotcha.
So as you go through and add stuff. So if you start with zero and you keep doing the numbers up, then you it's basically, that's like preview.
Mm.
So you do zero dot and just saying once we get to 1.0, then it's like stuff may change from zero to one that may break.
But once you're at one, you should be back compat.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of companies are starting to adopt this. The whole Node.js world and open source world is really adopting this. So that's.
And so we are adding versioning to our APIs, to those APIs as well.
Wait, hold on. Stop. Okay, so roll back just a little bit here. Some of this is stuff that I knew was coming, right? So some of this, but some of this stuff is brand new to me. So I'm going to play the role of the audience that doesn't know what the hell's going on because there's parts of that where I'm definitely going to know what the hell's going on. Okay, so the Office 365 APIs, they've been in preview mode for since March-ish. So that's March 2014. We're recording this in October 2014.
Yeah.
So six-ish months or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are going GA 1.0 essentially, and those will be live. Now, those are all going to be Office 365 APIs, which means all cloud stuff. And so does that mean Tech Ed Barcelona, they'll be rolled out throughout the entire Office 365, all the tenants, or were they in the process of rolling out?
They're in the process of rolling out. Well, we'll be in the process of rolling out starting on Monday of Tech Ed, so the 27th.
Okay.
And so it may take a week or two for us to get them out to everybody. So just sort of a caveat that it might take a while for you to see them.
Hmm.
But
so how do you know if you have them?
We're working on guidance on... You'll be able to call the metadata endpoint. So it's an OData. They're all OData endpoints, right? So you'll be able to...
Real OData?
Yes.
Sweet.
And you'll be able to call the metadata endpoint, and we'll give you guidance on how to check to see if what you're getting returned back is the GA version of the API.
Awesome. So OData... okay, let me go geeky here. V3, V4 spec? Don't know. Okay.
I don't know.
So,
and I know that's really lame, but I haven't been the one on point sort of leading it. So
all good. All good.
I need to go check.
Well, that's cool then, because that'll give us a full metadata endpoint. If it's full spec, then it's like batching and all that other kind of stuff. That's just around the Office 365 APIs. Are there plans to move that to on-prem or to have capabilities of that on-prem?
We're figuring that out at the moment. So we would love to be able to take some of those APIs and make them available on-prem in the next release, yeah. But I don't think we got it figured out entirely exactly what that looks like yet.
Okay, so that's a stay tuned kind of a thing for
yeah,
more information.
But there is the intention, yeah.
Okay, so does that mean too that we have tools that are going to come, that are going to be available with this too? Or does that mean, because I know we've had preview tools.
Yes, so this is sort of the next thing that we're, number two on the list is what we're doing around SDKs to make SDKs and tools to make this a whole bunch easier.
Ooh.
So let's start with your point about tools. So there'll be a new set of Visual Studio tools for Office 365 that come out. And so if you've already got the VizX installed, you'll get a little toast notification to say, hey, there's a new version, go update it. And that will basically give you, if you're not familiar with the way it works in Visual Studio, in Visual Studio, you can right-click and say add connected service on your project, and you'll be able to add a connected service to your project, and it'll wire up to your Office 365 or to Office 365, and it'll add a bunch of class libraries and stuff to your project and a couple in a NuGet package and things, and basically a bunch of libraries to help you call the APIs so you don't have to do raw REST calls. And so we're updating those to make it easier for folks from that are using Visual Studio to go connect to a service and then call the API endpoints. But the other thing we're doing is, in the true nature of cross-platform, you may have been familiar, we put out a preview for an Android SDK on GitHub. So github.com/whack-office-dev.
Yep.
And so we've done an Android SDK, and we'll also be coming out with an iOS SDK
Ooh.
For native iOS development next week.
Oh, very cool.
So the reason this is cool is it's not just because it's iOS, right? That's cool because it'll make it easier for folks to call Office 365, but it sort of completes our story of cross-platform, right? So if you're a native app developer and a mobile native app developer building apps for mobile devices, it won't matter if you're on Windows Phone or iOS or Android, you're going to have SDKs and tools across those platforms.
That's very cool.
And if you're a Xamarin developer, you know, doing cross-plat work, you'll also get the hookups for that too. And also the same goes for Cordova as well.
Mm.
So we're going to have good coverage for 365 development in terms of connecting to our APIs and pulling in, pushing data in and out, doing things like, a really good scenario is there's lots of enterprise apps that get built that have something to do with calendars, right? So like, imagine a line of business app that's to do with maintenance of plant and equipment on site, right? So you've got these inspectors that run around with mobile devices checking different, you know, quality inspections of gear or maintenance of gear and things like that. Often they rebuild the wheel in terms of the scheduling engine, right? But now you could, for example, you could use Office 365 environment and connect to the calendaring APIs to push and pull appointments in and out of people's calendars. And so rather than just having the calendar list, you know, of what your maintenance schedule is today in your line of business app, that person would also get it in their Outlook calendar, and then it would automatically sync down to their phone and everybody's happy, right? And so there's not another silo of scheduling information. You could just use you could use the calendar to do all that, and then use the power of what Exchange is already doing to push it out into all the places it should be and inviting the people and that sort of thing.
So now, it doesn't matter what platform you're on now, what desktop platform, what mobile platform you're on, you don't have an SDK to get into Office 365. If you're building native apps, you can do that with the native SDKs that are being provided. You could do that with Xamarin, which is going to be native as well. And then if you're doing more JavaScript-based solutions, that's going to be on the Cordova platform as well. Is Cordova, for those people who aren't familiar, is like a subtraction layer on the platform that you build against.
Yeah. So you'll be able to call, the main points are, whatever platform you're developing for, we should have you covered. And we've been working with MS OpenTech, which are a group. It's actually a separate company that Microsoft founded.
A wholly owned subsidiary
that Microsoft founded. And they've been doing the Android and iOS SDK work for us and things like that. One other thing to note, so it covers calendar, contacts, files, and mail. And the sort of the fifth spoke to that wheel is authentication. So a lot of these SDKs will help you with doing the auth and getting you wired up to call those APIs.
That's really cool. So, okay, so let me roll back a little bit, ask a couple questions here. Okay, so first, when we talk about all these APIs, I see people usually get a little confused and they wonder, well, where does the SharePoint REST API fit into this whole thing? That are the people who are like the old SharePoint guys. Is the SharePoint REST API considered part of the Office 365 APIs, or is it considered something different?
It's considered something different for clarity, but it's you can call those as well. So if there's a endpoint that you're used to calling to do a particular thing in SharePoint, chances are that you'll be able to call it in the same way as you would these new APIs. But the idea is that, like, rather than creating these silos of APIs based on whatever the product at the back is, we want to bring it together so that if you want to call a service in Office 365, you discover them in the same way and you call them in the same way, and you don't have to know the intricacies of the particular product at the back end.
Mm-hmm.
Think about tasks for a second, right? Tasks is one of the things that isn't covered in this release, but it's something we're working on. And right now, tasks exist in SharePoint, they exist in Project, they exist in Exchange, right? To a developer, you really don't care where those tasks sit.
Mm-hmm.
You just care that you're reading and writing tasks and that person gets a task, right?
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't need to know, well, I need to go get the Exchange API to go put a task into Outlook, or I need to go call the SharePoint one to go put it into a task list, or Project to go put it into Project. You just want tasks. And so over time, we'll go add more APIs and more surface area to these 365 APIs across the board. And so you don't need to know what's going on at the back end necessarily. You'll just be able to go, I just want mail, calendar, contacts, files, tasks, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Office Graph is another good one all the way down. So
seems like there's a, down the road, it looks, you don't have to comment on this. It seems like down the road, it makes sense that there's that SharePoint kind of makes its way into that as well, because it would just seem like part of the same story, like the collaboration piece to Office 365 APIs is the umbrella for everything.
Yeah.
Like right now it's like that, and then SharePoint's here on the side, but it kind of makes sense down the road to see that. But
so the interesting thing is you brought up the discovery service, right? And the discovery service, you call for a user and at the moment it tells you, hey, here are all of the endpoints for the different services that this user has access to. And when you look at those URLs at the moment, some of them are different, right? So there'll be the SharePoint one for files, for example, will tell you a SharePoint URL that you then go call for those APIs. Over time, we're going to get rid of that. Our goal is that further down the line, when you call a discovery service, all those service endpoints are things like, they might start, I don't actually know what the URL is going to be, but they might start with like api.office.com. They'll all begin with that, as opposed to, mytenant.sharepoint.com and things like that. So over time, we'll bring all those APIs, also the domains that they're served off all together as well.
Oh, that's cool. It's almost like the discovery service. People can think of a discovery service almost as the overreaching OData metadata endpoint for all of the Office 365 services.
Yeah.
Okay. So another question then. You mentioned something earlier. I want to run back to versioning.
Yes.
So versioning baked in out of the box with the Office 365 APIs. And when you say this, we're not talking about like a version of an email. We're talking about a version of the API. So that if I'm working with 1.0 of the API and it's, let's say it does something in a certain way and it's a classic V1 thing. It does it in a certain way and it works great. But after people in the wild really start using it, the community learns from how to work with it and they come up with certain things, and Microsoft learns how the community is using it, or they learn certain things. And somehow collectively, the process gets easier or better or whatever from today to 3 months down the road, so that I'm writing my code against version one. But when Microsoft releases an update to the APIs that goes to 1.1, it doesn't break my 1.0 code because I'm still pointing to the old endpoint or the old 1.0 version. And then I could go back and update my code to work with the 1.1, but it just makes sure that it's not like APIs don't change underneath me. They're kind of like they're static the way they are right there. And then the next version has the new or changed stuff. Is that, am I thinking about that the right way?
That is the right way, yes. So we want people to be able to take a dependency on the APIs, and we want to be able to modify them in the next version, either to change their behavior, which may be a back compat breaking change, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we'd call that, say, version 2 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Or version 3. But we can also do fixes to an API and not increment the major version, but just to fix up, you know, there might be a bug, for example, and your code will keep working.
So how did you guys implement that? Is that done with like a header, or is it done with in the URL, or how?
URLs.
Oh, it's in the URLs. Oh, so you did it like the sales, so that's how Salesforce does it. So you have something in the URL that's like, you go to the endpoint and then somewhere it's like /1.0 or something like that, / and keep going.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that.
So the plan is like, if you're writing code against the APIs today, that will also continue to work. So if you've written code against the preview APIs, those will continue to work. And then there's one exception to that, and that's with email. But there were some breaking changes in email in the last few weeks. And so, but moving forward, you'll be able to pick the version.
Now, does this versioning of the APIs, does this only apply to Office 365 APIs, or does it also kind of transcend over to the SharePoint REST API as well?
Only the new ones.
No, have any plans, or are we working on it or looking at it for the other one, or no comment? Or
I would say my comment is, as we expand the API surface, right, we'll be adding them into the 365 APIs.
Okay, gotcha. Very cool, man. That's that. You just nailed a big thing that I've been begging for, which is versioning of the APIs in the 365 one, and that's really cool.
Yeah. So there's a cool use for this that we'll be talking about at the show, and we've been working with ifttt.com.
Ah, yes. If this, then that.
Yeah. Just for the record, just, I know our listeners can't see this, but I'm wearing my IFT socks today.
Oh, that's so cool. I want socks.
You should see these socks. They're spectacular socks. We visited them. I went and visited them while I was down in Dreamforce, and we're talking about our IFT channels. And they gave me a pair of socks, and they are badass socks, let me tell you. I'll put a photo on the blog post. How about that? They're very, like, ludicrously nice, cool people, and like awesome little startup down in San Francisco. But for those who don't know, IFT allows you to sort of connect cloud services together. So you say, you know, IFTTT stands for if this, then that, right? So you can create these little rules that say things like, if I get a new email that's high priority, then send me an SMS or text message, right? And so actually in the blog post you'll see go live next week, but up on blogs.office.com, I've got a screenshot of a IFT recipe that I've created, which is kind of funny. It's like, if such a Nadella sends me email, then text me. Because I'll want to know about it ASAP.
Well, and this is a service that we've been using. We use it for the podcast whenever we have a new episode go live. So we use FeedBurner to like kind of cache or resyndicate our feed. And then when a new post shows up on that RSS feed, we have an IFTTT, they call them recipes. Mm-hmm. We have a recipe that says, when you see a new post, automatically add it to Buffer. And I have a Buffer account that finds out the best time based on all of our followers when to post a tweet that advertises the new post. And so we could publish a new post at 1 a.m, but it won't go live until, or it won't be published on Twitter until somewhere between like 9 a.m. Pacific or East Coast, all the way up to like, say, 5 p.m. East Coast. So it's like, when will it get the most visibility? And they figure that stuff out for, Buffer figures that out, but the way we get it to Buffer is through IFTTT.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool service. So yeah, you'll be able to use the Office 365 channels. Probably in a couple of weeks' time, we'll actually publish them. We just want to finish them up and make sure they're all working properly. And then, so we'll publish those channels, but yeah, you'll get mail, calendar, contacts, and OneDrive for Business, aka files, channels in IFT that you'll be able to go do stuff with.
That's very cool. For those of you who aren't familiar with IFT, I mean, even outside the 365 space, you got to go check it out. It's free and it's really, really cool, the stuff they can do. There's even, I have Nest thermostats, and I have it wired up so that when the thermostat reaches a certain level, if it's getting too hot upstairs in the kids' rooms, it sends me a text and it's like going, yeah, it's getting up to 79 degrees. They're not going to sleep tonight. And I'm like, ah, crap, I got it. What's wrong with the air conditioner?
Oh, that's cool. I have to do that. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So the if channels are all based on these new APIs, right? So the 365 APIs calls those to do, you know, the channels are all built on those APIs, what I'm trying to say.
That's very cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be interesting. So I look forward to seeing some of the recipes people cook up.
Those are always interesting. Yes. It's one of the, that goes right in that category of, stuff that we came up with, but the most interesting things are the things that we didn't think about.
Yeah.
Right? That old Kinect, Xbox Kinect video that when they did the API and the commercial that went live on Thanksgiving that day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Man, busy stuff.
Yeah. So GA of APIs, SDKs and mobile stuff as are the one, number one and two. And the third thing is...
But wait, there's more?
There is more. The third thing is kind of an interesting one because it's... Folks may have read about the new navigation experience in Office 365 that's coming out or will be rolling out over the next couple of months, which is called the App Launcher. So in Office 365, you go in with a browser and there used to be these text links, or we used to call them tabs, across the top of the nav bar, which was like, you know, Outlook, Calendar, People, Delve, Power BI, that sort of thing, right? But as we were adding more and more services and more things to Office 365, that list was just getting longer and longer, and it wasn't a very scalable navigation solution. And so we added this thing called the App Launcher, which is, you know, you push a button up in the top left of your screen and the sort of flyout pops out, right? The App Launcher pops out and it's got tiles for all of your different apps. And to a certain degree, that's customizable by a user. They can say, I want to pin this particular app to my App Launcher, and then there's a more apps link at the bottom in the bottom right of that launcher, and they click on that and it takes them to a page that shows them all of the apps they can pick from or pin to the App Launcher. And so it gives them a really easy way to sort of configure their App Launcher and also get access to the apps they use the most frequently. So that news came out last week, but for developers, what we're going to allow is extending that App Launcher with second and third party applications. So customers who build apps and what we call ISVs, right? Startups and companies that build products that sell them will be able to add apps as well. And so for example, let's say one of our partners we've been working with is a company called Xero.com, which are a SMB accounting, online accounting software, right? Xero with an X, Xero.com. And so we've been working with a handful of partners, but they're one of them, and they've built integration with it so that if I'm a Office 365 customer who uses Xero, I'll be able to pin Xero to my App Launcher. And then when you click it, you get single sign-on between Office 365 and Xero so that you don't have to end up going to another web application, you know, using LastPass or 1Password or whatever, or forgetting your password and having to go through the whole password reset thing, will give you single sign-on with your Office 365 account across web applications, plus the navigation integration. So integration on the My Apps page and on the App Launcher. And so then you can pin them to the App Launcher if you want, or you can just leave them in the, you know, in the list of apps you've got in the My Apps page. But it gives people a place, or gives people a way to basically bring all of the apps they use to run their business, a place to launch from and sort of integrate it in as a first sort of a first class citizen, if you will, in Office 365.
Wow. That's going to be slick. Yeah. I saw the blog post go live last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago. And you see that the metaphor, the implementation we have today for adding apps, it works in SharePoint, but if you have stuff that's bigger for Office 365, the current UI model kind of starts to break down, and it also doesn't work so well when you have lots of apps.
Yeah, totally.
So it's kind of like that whole idea of like the horizontal navigation in a browser or in a site, and also next thing you know, you got to do a second line of dropdowns. It's like, oh, there's a nightmare.
Yeah, totally.
That's cool.
Yeah, so now we've got a more flexible nav model, we can make it extensible, right, and have others add their own apps to it. Now, the way it works is pretty sweet because as a developer, you don't have to do anything.
Oh.
I know I'm kind of overselling it a little bit. You really don't have to do anything so long as you do a little bit of the plumbing on your app. And so you don't have to add anything to Office 365. The way an app will show up in My Apps is if your app, let's take Xero as an example. Xero are adding Azure AD Auth as an option or to Xero.com. So what that means is you'd be able to sign into Xero.com using your Azure AD account, right? And Office 365 uses Azure AD for its accounts, right? So really you're just signing into Xero with an Office 365 account. And once Xero have done that work, then Office 365 looks through all of the apps that you've authorized your account with and magically sticks them in your My Apps page. So we look at Azure AD and we say, hey, you've signed into Xero and DocuSign and Nintex, for example. And so those apps, we know that from Azure AD because you've consented for those apps using your account. And so we'll look in Azure AD, grab those registrations, and then show them on your My Apps page. So you don't have to manually go add them to the My Apps page or the app launcher. It'll figure that out from Azure AD.
That's cool. That's very cool. Okay, so now next question. When does that start rolling out, or when do people have access to that?
That will start rolling out once you've got the app launcher in your tenant, you're good to go. The app launcher will start rolling out on the 27th, but will take some time until the end of the calendar year to get into everybody's tenancies.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool, man.
So that'll be there from like third-party extensibility or second and third-party extensibility of being able to put apps on there will be available as soon as you've got the app launcher.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you got a lot of stuff coming next week.
Yeah, that'll be really cool. We've got something for people that are building mobile apps, building, you know, apps that run on mainframes that just want to talk to 365, or we've got, you know, SaaS app builders like Xero and so forth that can also integrate with 365 on the app launcher. We've got a little bit of something for everybody.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Hey, so in terms of a little bit of leg that we're showing, I know we're going a little over time here, so I hope you don't mind.
Nah, we had a lot of news in the last episode with Azure. This is a lot of news in 365, so by all means, I'm good.
So one of the other things we're going to show, we're not releasing it, but we're just going to start showing what we're working on next is I'll tell you about a couple of things we're going to show. One is, so you're familiar with apps for Office today. Maybe some of our listeners aren't. I'm sure you are, AC, but there's a way of extending Office applications like Excel, PowerPoint, Word, and Outlook so that you can put your applications inside our applications, right? So this might be a good example of this is the LinkedIn app for Outlook. Mm. So you can go and add the LinkedIn app inside Outlook and it'll show you where, you know, for recipients on your mail, whether you're friends with them on LinkedIn and you can friend them and all that stuff. Another example would be DocuSign and Word, right? You're working on a Word doc, you want to go send it out for signatures. You can add the DocuSign app to Word and then right from within Word, you can send it out to DocuSign and send it out for signatures and so forth, digital signatures. So that's available in Office 2013 today and has been for some time. But we've also now got Office on the iPad, and these apps are not available in those applications.
These Office apps don't work in Office for iPad apps.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
So these third-party applications like DocuSign and Word, for example, mm-hmm. or you know, something along those lines, those don't work on the Office for iPad apps. So one thing we're going to show is we're going to start showing some of the work we're doing to bring those apps to the iPad. Mm. So you'll be able to use, you know, apps that you'd pop up, and we're going to show Excel, for example. So you can have an app in Excel that does some sort of data visualization or crunches numbers or whatever. And then when you open that document in Excel on the iPad, you'll also be able to get those apps. So the important part here is people might be like, huh? So what? And it's like, well, for developers that build these things, one of the tenets that we basically said we'd go and do is make these apps work across everywhere Office will work, whether that be in the rich client applications or in Office Online in a browser or in our native applications on, you know, iPad and so forth. So we're just adding more endpoints where these apps will show up.
That's funny you say that today, because I'm doing a project where I'm There's some content that's being built for people to do like a one-day training event. And I was doing a sales pitch to it at the beginning for why people should care about building apps. And I swear the thing I recorded this morning, I recorded a statement that I made saying that today the apps don't work in Office for iPad, but Microsoft is working in that towards that direction. I'd love to go back and re-record it, just be like, and as was shown recently at Tech Ed Barcelona in late 2014.
We're working on it.
Yeah. Working on it, yeah. Even more than just in the future. It's actually, you can see stuff in it too. So
yeah. The other one, we're not actually going to show this, but we're gonna mention it as we're also doing it for Outlook on a Mac as well. So the next version of Outlook for Mac will have these apps in it as well.
Ooh.
Which I know will make you very excited, I see.
Well, yeah. I'm a little more interested in the part that you said, next version of Outlook on a Mac, right?
Yeah.
The apps part, yes, I'm interested, but I'm interested in the bigger piece to that because it's been many years since we've been able to update that, and I'm still running Mac Office 2011, which let's just say that it's not nearly the quality of Office 2013, and Outlook is not nearly the quality of Mac Office 2011.
Yeah.
It's in there, but it's not the great quality. So,
hey, well, no, just all I'll say is just stay tuned for news on that.
I have been.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things we're going to show off that we're working on. And the idea is that by the time we get to build next year, we'll be able to look back at the work we've done between now and build. And then also, again, look forward on the next set of stuff that we're working on between build and the next time we come and do a big sort of talk.
Yeah, see, that kind of goes back to the discussion we had a couple episodes ago, which that's the part that I find is kind of challenging, where I see the Ignite conference and I see build, and then that's the part of, I'm a developer, which one am I supposed to look at, right? And so I still see that question coming up a lot, but that just kind of reiterated what I was thinking, but oh well.
Hey, well, if it helps calm your nerves, we're gonna be announcing stuff around that time, right?
Yeah.
And we'll be talking about it at Build and at Ignite. Yeah. So from an Office 365 point of view, you're not going to miss out on anything if you go to one or the other. We're gonna talk about the same stuff at both, especially around anything that's new that's coming.
If you're a developer,
yes.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Yep. I didn't want like all the IT pros start showing up at Build and being like, I couldn't get in, it's sold out.
No. Sorry, I just mean in the Office 365 dev world. Yeah,
that's all very cool stuff, man. That's very cool. It'll be very interesting to see the videos from the keynotes and from the presentations you guys do, and those make it up on, I'm assuming they're gonna make it up on Channel 9 like the other conferences have.
Yep.
And it'll be even more interesting to kind of see the reaction that people have from this stuff. So
yeah, stay tuned on, we're going to have a blog post on blogs.office.com. And the other place to look is on dev.office.com. We've got a new release of that coming that coincides with Tech Ed. There's a whole bunch more stuff coming up on that. And so it'll all be published up on dev.office.com. Actually, we've got a really cool little thing going live. Not little, it's kind of a big thing. What we call the API sandbox. And so you'll be able to, off dev.office.com, you'll find the link to it, but it's a website you'll be able to go and play around with these new Office 365 APIs in a browser. So you'll be able to write code and get samples and things and then actually hit play, like there's a play button, and you hit the play button and it executes your code and calls the APIs and brings you back results. So you can tool around with the APIs and play with them without having to, you know, crack open a Visual Studio project or what have you. Just see how the APIs work and see what the data that, you know, it's the kind of that standard, there's going to be a box at the top and a box at the bottom, and you write your code in the box at the top and then you hit the play button and poof, you get some results out the bottom.
Ah, that's cool. It's kind of like the old TypeScript, the TypeScript playground.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Wow,
very cool.
Okay, so that's a bit of the news, but we thought we'd try something a little different this show. We thought we'd, there was actually your suggestion about coming up with just some, you know, in previous shows, we've said, hey, what's interesting to you right now? Or, you know, what's tickling your fancy these days? But we thought we'd do sort of picks of the week, so to speak. And these are kind of just random things that you find are interesting.
Yeah.
It was your idea, so why don't you go ahead? Why don't you start?
Oh boy, here we go. Okay, so yeah, so this is, you say it was my idea, just make sure everybody knows. It's not...
Well, you stole it off somebody
else. Yes, I stole it off another show called JavaScript Jabber. They do it in Angular, Adventures in Angular, and they do this, the hosts do this every week. Okay, so they're just random stuff. It could be absolutely anything. Mm-hmm. So my first one that I'll give you, it's a tool that I found I'm having to build some sequence diagrams for something I'm working on right now. Actually, I'm working on a presentation that I'm going to write it up, and it'll probably be live. It may be live by the time this episode goes live. But when I'm at the MVP Summit, which is going to be the week that this episode goes live, I'm going to be talking about something called the way I think that auto-hosted apps should work. So we lost the auto-hosted apps in SharePoint earlier this year. It never made it out of preview. So I'm doing a presentation on here's how I think it should work. And I have some UML diagrams I'm trying to create. Well, UML diagrams, if you've ever done a sequence diagram, you know that it just sucks building these things. Hmm. So I'm on a Mac. I can switch over to a VM, do Visio, but I found a cool little tool called Planet UML. And what this thing does, it's a Java app, but I can basically use a certain syntax in a text file, and it watches the text file and it generates a PNG UML diagram of the thing that I wrote. So it's like version control with it with text. It's almost like...
It's sort of like Markdown, but for UML.
I was just about to say, it's like Markdown, but for UML, and you can do it for like use cases or sequence diagrams or whatever. And it's this, I want to say it's a crappy little tool. I mean, it's like when you look at the website, you're like, Jesus, they built this thing with GeoCities. But
but that's good. They're putting their effort into their tool and not into their website.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I went through, I was like, where's the integration? And it's like, oh my God, you could build, it builds PNGs, it builds SVGs. You can integrate with existing tools. You can run it on the website and it does builds the UML on the website on the fly.
Wow, that's cool.
So that's my first one. My other pick that I'm going to do is a book, a series of books that I'm reading. A guy found me, the author found me on Goodreads. I share books that I read on Goodreads. The guy, I think is, you pronounce it Nathan Farrugia, and it's a sci-fi series. It's a sci-fi series, and it's this idea of like that people have been genetically altered to create like super warriors, and there's like a shadow government in the world that's creating all of these terrorism things and everything, and they brainwash these people to say that they're fighting terrorism, but they're actually the terrorists.
Huh.
It's called I'm on the second book right now. It's called the Sephiram Sequence, but it's all about a thing called the Fifth Column. So I'll put a link to it on in the show notes as well. But I read the first one. It's just wicked. Like one guy's got the special genetic thing where he can see in the infrared spectrum. Another guy can pick up like subsonic sounds and stuff. One person's like, super healing. So he broke his arm, and they say doctors like it'll be, you know, you'll be in a cast for 6 weeks. He's like, oh, I have this thing off in 2 days.
Gotcha.
So
yeah, it'd be handy.
It's pretty cool.
It'd be handy to have those superpowers.
Definitely would. So how about you?
Nice. I got a couple of teeny tiny little utilities that I find extremely useful in Windows that I use all the time now. The first, and this is going to sound a little random, but bear with me. It's a utility called Always On Top.
you might want to keep going and explain what you got there.
Yeah, exactly. So this is just a little executable you run in it, and you run it on startup. And then what you can do is, you know how some apps let you sort of, you know, pin them to the top so they always stay on the top, no matter what other windows you've got going on, they'll always be at the top so you can see them. This little guy will let you do that with any app, whether or not, regardless of whether it has that option in its menu or not.
Wow, very cool.
So there's a few apps that I really want this for, like when we're recording or when we're doing things like that. And so it's as simple as you go, you control spacebar and the app will stay on the top. What are you giggling about, you two-year-old?
Just the name of the app. It's like an extension I saw for Chrome where it's called Cloud to Butt. And basically, it replaces every instance of the word cloud that it finds on the web to butt. So it's like, it also, if it says like to the cloud, it says to my butt. And so when you're
is this utility written by one Mr. Spencer Harbar by any chance?
No, I don't know.
Because I suspect that
I have to go through and find this. But yeah, it's called Cloud to Butt. It's a Chrome extension. And I posted it on Twitter and shared it with Todd Clinton, Shane Young, because I know they get irritated with it. And they're like, so it was just the screenshot from it was about
that's funny.
Satya Nadella talking about, you know, Microsoft has had significant investments in my butt.
It's funny. I'm going to have to do a presentation like that one day.
I tell you, reading the quarterly report from yesterday, which was freaking awesome from Microsoft about how important cloud was, you would think that they've got one of the best looking asses in the world.
Nice. I'm going to have to check that out. That's hilarious. Yeah. I like it.
All right.
Hey, so that's the first utility, Always On Top, it's called. And the second one is something that's really pissed me off about Windows for the longest time. This utility is called Audio Switcher. And for anybody that does anything with audio, multiple audio inputs in Windows will sympathize with me on this, right? So this utility sits in your system tray, is a little icon, and gives you one-click audio switching between different inputs and different outputs. So previously in Windows, you right-click on the little speaker, you say like recording devices or playback devices, and then you go switch, then it pops up a dialog box, and then you pick which one, and then you have to right-click it and say make default or make, you know, whatever, and switch the audio. And so it's like three or four clicks just to change from, say, a headset to your desktop speakers, at least digital inputs and outputs. And so this little audio switcher utility sits on your system tray, and within one click, you can change which microphone you're picking stuff up from and also switching your output devices too. And this has perplexed me about why this hasn't been a baked-in feature from day one. Like, I just don't understand it. Most people have a headset. Most people have desktop speakers. You think you'd make it easy to switch between the two?
Yeah, it's an out of the box feature that you have with on OS X, where like everything in the menu bar, if I hold down the Option key and click it, a different menu pops up, and that's one of the ones I found this out after using OS X for like 9 months, and I saw somebody do it. It's like, oh my god, I can switch inputs without having to open up a dialogue and change here and change to test it, and so
super easy. Yeah. So yeah, this little guy is called audioswitcher.exe, and you run it on startup and it puts a little thing in your system tray, and then boom, real easy to switch audio inputs.
Cool.
Those are my two picks.
Awesome. Awesome. So before we hang up, click on the link that I just sent you. Check out the Cloud to Butt Plus extension there and look at the very first title. It says Microsoft's profits slide on mobile, but its butt flourishes.
I am absolutely going to load this for sure. This looks like a total productivity booster to me, because I'm going to want to read all these things more, because they're just going to be far more hilarious.
Good talking to you, bud.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, AC.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.